Hey guys. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, Manny.
How's everybody doing? Okay, so I know that, Megan, are you out west or out east?
Ottawa.
You're Ottawa in Ottawa. Based. Okay, and then Melanie, you're out west.
Yeah, I'm in BC.
Okay, all right, cool. So then, yeah, we've done this before where we've had shows where we're speaking to people from both ends of the country kind of thing. I know that it's not far east and far west, but it's technology. I love it. And then I'm excited about doing this show because we're going to talk about something that's really important in the construction industry. What do we want to, like, what's the official title here?
Well, I think we're talking about silica, basically.
Yes.
Silica exposure. And the reason why Megan and I want to talk about this today is because we have a tool that can help construction workers and employers to manage silica at the workplace called the Silica Control Tool.
And it's been implemented out west right now. It's slowly being implemented in Ontario. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. We've had the Silica Control Tool. It's an online web-based tool. It's been available in British Columbia since 2017, and it has been in Ontario for about a year now.
So I guess my first question is, why did it take so long to get to Ontario? Without getting political.
Megan can maybe speak to this a little more than I can, but or if you want me to jump in, I can.
Well, I would say because it's... British Columbia came up with this tool in 2017, 2018, and it was, it's a great tool, but honestly, the provinces, we need to get together a bit better and start sharing information because every province is different. You have a different provincial ministry that governs health and safety. And also something that matters, I guess, a bit more is occupational exposure limits. So every province and territory are different as well. So our occupational exposure limit for silica, we actually have two, and they're different than the one that's in BC. And that matters when it comes to the tool.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay. So if you guys could just share with the audience your official titles from each of the organizations, and then everyone gets a good idea.
Sure. My name is Melanie Gorman-Ning, and I am a health and exposure scientist at the British Columbia Construction Safety Alliance.
And I'm Megan Friesen. I'm an occupational hygienist with the Occupational Health Clinics for Ontario Workers.
Okay, so those are big business cards, right? A lot of going on there.
Yeah, a lot of words.
No, but it's good. So I want to dive right into it because I know that you guys were talking about how if you work basically with sand, rock, gravel, concrete, brick, stone, mortar, granite, glass, or ceramics, you're basically one third of the workforce. Basically, just under 500,000 workers across Canada. One third of the workforce handles those materials, which create silica dust, airborne silica dust, right?
That's true. And in Ontario alone, the construction industry itself is nearly 600,000 people, I think, which accounts for almost 8% of the workforce in Ontario alone.
So it's pretty staggering, right? So we need to be more safe about all this stuff.
Definitely. And that's why we're here. We'll answer all your questions about safety and silica.
Well, I want to get into the tool itself. I want to figure out, like, I know that we had a call previously a few months back and we were discussing it, but it was pretty easy. If I figured it out and I kind of absorbed what you guys were talking about, then I think all the other monkeys in construction could figure it out because I'm one of them. But I think that if you guys walked us through and how it works when you get on the job site, how this all connects with everybody.
Yeah. So the tool was designed to make it easy, basically. Like at the BC Construction Safety Alliance, our motto is making safety simpler. And so we want to make tools where people can protect themselves, protect their workers, and make it easy. Because we know that everybody's busy. We know that, you know, not everybody can hire a scientist to come into their work site and take measurements and develop a plan. So we want to put all the information online so people can access it and protect themselves. So how it works is if you log into the tool, now I should say at the beginning that you need to make an account to use the tool. Not absolutely everybody can use the tool. There are some restrictions. In British Columbia, anybody can use the tool if they are registered with WorkSafe BC. In New Brunswick, it is now available in New Brunswick. Anybody in New Brunswick who's registered with WorkSafe New Brunswick can use the tool. And in Ontario, Megan can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe all construction employers can register for the tool. They just need to make an account with OCal, I believe. So anyway, so once you have your account, you can log into the tool and it walks you through the whole process. There's a lot of information on there about what is silica, why do you need to care about it, what are the health effects, etc. And it asks you like information about your work site. It asks you what work you're doing, what kind of tools you're using, what materials you're working with. Are you indoors or outdoors? Are you residential construction or are you commercial construction or like a civil project? And then as you enter all this information in drop downs, all of that information is used by the tool to create an estimate of the level of silica that the workers are likely to be exposed to. And that comes from we have a big database of measurements that were, occupational hygienists have gone out into construction work sites and attached air monitoring pumps to workers and then sent the samples to the lab and got the result back and measured exactly how much silica dust is in the air that they're breathing. And so the tool, it uses all the information that's entered by the user to kind of query that database to estimate the exposure level associated with the specific task that the user is entering. So for example, if you go on and say, okay, I'm going to be drilling concrete with an electric hammer drill for less than 4 hours at a residential new build, and it's going to be indoors, then it'll tell you what your exposure limit is, and it compares it to the regulatory exposure limit. It tells you if you're above or below that limit. And if you're above the limit, which you probably are because the exposure limits for silica are very low because it's so dangerous, then it guides you through a series of control options, things that you can do to protect yourself. Like, for example, you could use a vacuum attachment to the drill, or you could use water suppression, or you can do work shift scheduling so that it's not just one worker doing all the drilling. You share it up between different workers, or you can make sure your worksafe is clean from dust, housekeeping. And it goes through all of those. And then it gives you an updated estimate of your exposure level. And it tells you, are you still above the exposure limit or are you now below the exposure limit? And if you're still above, then it tells you what kind of respiratory protection you're going to need.
Were the tests also done in Ontario job sites, or were they just primarily done in the BC job sites?
Yeah, well, we don't have most of them are from actually, they're not just from BC. We have data that is from some of it's from the United States, some of it is from BC, some of it is from Alberta. We have a bit from Ontario, but because it started in Western Canada, more of the data is from Western Canada. But that is something that we are working on. We are working to get more data into the tool from other parts of Canada, including Ontario.
I'm just curious, is water suppression better than vacuum suppression or vice versa?
It depends on the work activity. So for some work activities, the water suppression is more effective, and for some vacuum is more effective. In some cases, you can use both together. But then also in other cases, that doesn't work. So the effect of the controls is really specific to the job task that you're doing, and then the tool will give you that information.
And what's the level of safeness that you guys are using as, I guess, a gauge that you have to stay within or under?
That differs by province. So in British Columbia, the limit that we have is 0.025 milligrams of silica, which is a really tiny amount per cubic meter of air. So for every cubic meter of air, you can only have like really kind of a pinprick amount of silica dust. And Megan, you can maybe talk about what the level is in Ontario.
Yeah, and in Ontario, it's a little bit more complex because we have two exposure limits for silica and air. There's a 0.1 milligrams per cubic meter for silica as quartz, which is the more common type of silica found in construction products. But then there's also a more stringent OEL, which is 0.05, so half of that 0.1 for silica as cristobalite. But because we have two, and the tool best operates with one exposure limit applied, and it's a best practice tool, the lower of the two OELs was selected for just to make sure that we're targeting a more protective option. And what's nice about the tool is when you get through the pages, and it provides you with this estimated exposure limit on a really nice visual. There's a dial that shows you if the needle is sitting in red, that means it's bad, you've exceeded the exposure limit. And if you're sitting in green, that means good, you're sitting below it. But it'll provide you or the user of the online tool, it'll show that OEL, it'll compare that result to the OEL, the exposure limit, and then it will also compare it to a 50% action limit, which is something that's sort of another best practice methodology that occupational hygienists follow, which is instead of waiting for an exposure to get to that exposure limit, let's aim for 50% of that or even lower. That's kind of a good benchmark to sometimes target.
So I know you guys mentioned you're comparing it to, what was it again, Melanie? It was 0.02 per cubic meter.
Yeah.
And then in Ontario, it depends on which situation is happening. But I mean, I'll make light of the fact that sometimes, obviously, we've been on job sites where you walk in and it's literally a cloud, like it's a wall. And, you know, unless someone's, you know, had some teeth whitening, you can't really see them. That's how dense the area is with all this airborne dust. At what level would that be? I mean, can you guys just guess that? Like when we're seeing just the extreme where people have just done nothing to do anything to contain the airborne silica?
Yeah, the easy answer is overexposed right there. As soon as you can see a plume of dust, as we call it, guaranteed it'll be over the exposure limit.
And blowing your nose and getting all that dark mucus out of there doesn't really solve the situation.
Our body will trap some dust and particulate, yeah, in our mucous membranes. But that is those are the bigger particles, and the respirable crystalline silica, which is the most complex and specific term for that silica, is it can get really, really small. So small, it is literally invisible to the eye. So you'll see the plume overall because you have such a high concentration of the silica dust mixed with binders, mixed with everything else that's being pushed into the air. But the silica dust that is respirable fraction, that will make its way into your lungs, is very small, and it'll bypass that completely.
Can we talk a little bit about the actual down the road dangers as a result of this?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So there are two main health effects that we worry about with respirable crystalline silica exposure. The first one is very specific to silica, and it's called silicosis.
Yes.
And what that is, small respirable dust particles. When you inhale them, they don't get, you know, trapped by the mucus. They don't come back out like we discussed. They end up all the way deep into the gas exchange region of the lungs, all the way down to the alveoli, and they cause scarring. And they can't be cleared from that. Once they're there, they stay there and they can't come back out, and they cause scarring. And over time, that if you're exposed, you know, for your whole working life or for a few years, or even if you're exposed to a very, very, very high amount for a shorter period of time, they can cause so much scarring that your lungs are irreversibly damaged. And in some cases, you can die if your lungs are badly enough damaged. And once this process has started, it can't be stopped, and there is no cure. The only real cure is to get a lung transplant, which is not a very nice cure if you can even get a lung. So that's one fear with silica. People almost think of it like, you know, like your lungs are turning to stone because they're so scarred, and people, you know, over the symptoms that you would get, you know, coughing, shortness of breath, difficulty breathing, feeling weak, unable to walk upstairs. Now that typically takes many years to develop, but maybe we'll talk about this a bit later. There have been recently reports of people getting early onset silicosis. So they get silicosis after just a few years of work, and that has been associated with artificial stone countertops. So what we have found is that those types of materials, those artificial stone materials, have really, really high levels of silica in them. They're up to like 90% silica. So people who work in the manufacturing shops and they're grinding and cutting these artificial stones, we've seen cases in the United States, in Australia, some in Europe, of people, workers in their 30s and their 40s, getting silicosis, having to go on an oxygen tank, in some cases dying of silicosis.
Wow. Attention contractors and construction professionals. Do you feel like your expenses are way too high? Imagine cutting your spending by 28%. At Schooley Mitchell, they dig deep to help you save on essential expenses that could be impacting your bottom line. Their risk-free analysis allows you to concentrate on your trade while they find those savings for you. Don't let extra expenses keep you from achieving the success you deserve. Reach out today to schedule your risk-free analysis and unlock your savings. Find them at www.schooleymitchell.com/office/AEGIUGGIO/about. Or reach out to them at erica.jugio@schooleymitchell.com. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
And the other main concern for silica exposure is that it also is a confirmed cause of lung cancer. So there's a research group in Canada called CAREX Canada, and they're a carcinogen surveillance group. So they estimate how many workers in Canada are exposed to known human carcinogens at work and what levels they're exposed to. And they have estimated that about 573 cases of lung cancer in Canada every year are attributable to silica exposure.
And does that also apply to natural stones? Are we just pointing a finger at the man-made stones, but natural stones still creates airborne?
Yes. So that's right. So there is silica in natural stone. Silica, it's naturally occurring mineral, and so it's in natural stone. It's in concrete, it's in asphalt, it's in all of these things. The concern about the artificial stone is that they have extremely high levels of silica. So we've seen people get sick faster with the artificial stones, but there is still a concern with natural stones as well.
What about the mindset of the tradesperson? Like, I'm thinking about bricklayers, how they'll only cut one brick. They'll use a quick cut. And we're obviously in the winter months now, so water's not an option. You're in a tent sometimes, and now you're cutting that one brick to get it done. But that's just because you're outside, it doesn't mean that Mother Nature's taking all that airborne away from you.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, usually the exposure levels are lower in outdoors, so people aren't completely wrong to think that way. But because silica is so hazardous and because the safe levels of exposure are so low, yeah, even a short duration of exposure, even outdoors, can be harmful, especially, if you're in a tent, it's going to build up in the tent. Or if you're downwind of where the cutting is happening, you're going to get that exposure. Sometimes even if your exposure is only 10 minutes, if it's 10 minutes of exposure to a really high level, that's going to put you over the full shift exposure limit just with that short period of exposure.
Regarding your data, I'm just curious, are the younger trades waking up? Are they seeing the dangers regarding this? I already know the old dogs, they're set in their ways. We know that, right? But the younger trades, are they smartening up?
Think so, although I don't know. I mean, I don't have any good data on this. I don't know if you have had any conversations with younger workers, Megan.
In terms of the data, I can't say for sure. I'm trending towards maybe a bit more awareness. Social media is great. It's out there. You can get just so much more information now, as a younger worker, as opposed to when I was a younger worker, it all came from books and it came from teachers and it came from employers. What I can tell you is a couple summers ago, I was on a job site. It was a mine site. And I was getting the standard health and safety training that you get from the health and safety guy on site. It was myself and it was a driller, and he must have been in his early 20s. We were the only two there, and the health and safety manager started talking about silica, and he's like, "You guys know what that is, right?" And I'm like, "Yep, not I'm fully aware." And this worker, who's a driller, who drills into rock concrete, that is his job, and he had never heard of silica. And I shouldn't be surprised, but I was a little surprised. And yeah, well, I mean, he got to learn about it that day, but I fear, I mean, there's a lot going on construction sites, and there's a lot going on in everyone's lives. And especially whether you're going to work and you're getting training, you might get work at heights training, because that's very important. We don't want people people need to be tied off. We don't want them falling down shafts or off of buildings. But then these extra things, these sometimes we call them designated substances, or basically chemical and biological exposure type materials that can give you an occupational illness. They're not necessarily conveyed with the highest of importance, or even within the level of detail. There are just so many of them. But silica is a big one. It's a big push in Ontario right now. And it's something that we're definitely, I'm aware of, and we're doing everything we can to make sure that trades, and especially the youth going into new jobs, they're always at the highest risk for injuries, let alone illnesses.
I mean, I'm not trying to fault anybody, but I'm looking at the situation about the young workers getting on job sites, and they're eager to just learn, find their passion, deliver, make money, survive, you know, all these things. And then at what point are they actually educated about silica? And it won't be until later on in life. If a parent, an uncle, or some relative, or a friend who has a father, or what have you, they're having the onset of silica issues later on in life, that it might be a conversation to them. But when you're younger, you're invincible. We're all supermen and women. That's our mindset, more than men than the women, because the women are smarter. That's just the bottom line when it comes to the construction site. And it's like someone needs to stop them and go, by the way, you can't continue drilling like this in an enclosed environment without any proper protection for you, because you are going to have problems later on in life. No?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is a challenge that I think Megan and I both have, because, you know, we work primarily with occupational disease prevention, and it's always hard to get people to care about things that are going to affect them like 30 years down the line. But it, you know, it's important, because you don't want to, you know, you want to enjoy your retirement when it comes. And so silica, as Megan mentioned, is what's known as a designated substance in many provinces, including Ontario and British Columbia, which means that there are certain extra regulatory requirements for protecting workers. And one of the requirements is that employers do have a responsibility to train workers in the health hazards of the materials that they're working with. And because silica is known to be so hazardous to health, employers have that responsibility to tell workers that this is dangerous and they need to be protecting themselves.
I just feel that it's set on the back door, just because, like you said, it's a later on problem. It's not a today problem. You possibly falling, which is the number one safety risk on any job site, that's a now problem, right? And then also just, you know, fear of the tools and what you can do, injure yourself or heavy machinery around you. That's all a now problem. But silica is just such a later on problem, which is, it's a problem that you don't want to have. That's the thing about it. I'm just speaking as an older person. You don't want to have this problem later on.
No, and once you have it, it's too late.
Are we seeing, I'm just assuming that it's also putting a strain on the healthcare system as well, too. I can just assume that we're probably seeing more cases because we've got more construction projects going on. We're getting, obviously, we're attracting more people into the industry, but we want to educate the people properly, right?
Yeah, what I would say, especially in Ontario, are you going to find a big uptick in silicosis diagnosis cases? No, apparently not. About 20 people per year in Ontario are diagnosed specifically with silicosis. But silicosis is a pulmonary fibrosis type of disease or illness. So what happens is, let's say I'm a worker, I have no idea that I'm working with silica. After 5-10 years, I develop chest pain, shortness of breath. I go to my doctor, and doctors, they always have a limited amount of time to be with patients. And if I'm not, and I, the worker, if I don't know that I was working with silica, that I was working with any kind of like a hazardous or designated substance that I could have been inhaling, breathing in, touching, ingesting accidentally, but especially when it comes to silica, it's inhalation. And I don't tell my doctor. That doctor will think of other reasons for my symptoms, and they can end up bypassing that potential workplace hazard completely because I didn't know to tell them, and I didn't even know I was working with silica. So that's what I fear the most is lungs. You can have all sorts of, yeah, bronchitis. You can have emphysema. There can be chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COVID. There's all these symptoms that relate to our lungs, our illnesses, and then our symptoms can all seem very general. And so having workers know where silica is, how they're working with it, and where it is on the job site empowers them to then say, okay, I'm not feeling well. I'm going to tell my doctor, and I'm going to let them know that I'm a driller, or I cut concrete for a living. And that's something that they can, that we're hoping to convey amongst all of our other things we're trying to share about silica.
What I love about this tool is, like, am I fair to say that it should be part of PPE now? Like, you get on a job site, you've got your safety footwear, you've got your harness, you've got your hard hat, you've got your respirator, and then you also have this tool that will let you know that the environment you're about to work in is safe. So then it technically is part of PPE, no?
Well, I guess we would say it's more of an administrative control. But yeah, if it's something that you have with you all the time, it should be considered an essential part of your control toolkit for sure.
And what I want to go down the path is, and you guys hopefully can enlighten us, is when you do go there and you read the environment, and obviously, hopefully you're not, but if you are above the safe areas, then it's going to make recommendations on what you can do to make that environment safe. So now you bring in the recommendations and you start lowering it, right? But then you don't get to the safe zone yet, but you got to continue doing all these things to get this done. And what are some of the PPE, like I want to educate people and just let them know what is the proper mask, depending on, I guess, on the work, right? Or is it a full face shield? Those kinds of things. I mean, we know about the hard hat, we know about sound protection, but we don't take that much care regarding our respiratory issues that are going to happen, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's one of the strengths of the tool is it can help you with that, because it can be choosing the correct respirator is very important, because there are lots of different types of respirators, as you say. And not only that, if you're using like a filtering respirator, an air purifying respirator, there are lots of different types of cartridges. And yes, if you choose the wrong cartridge, you're not going to be protecting yourself. So for silica, it's pretty simple. It is, it's a particulate. So you need any cartridge that filters particulate is what you need for silica, like a P100, P95, that kind of thing. That would work for silica. Now, and what those do is they catch the particles in the filter so that the air you breathe doesn't have the particle in it. But then the next part is, yeah, what kind of respirator do you need? Do you need a full face? Do you need a half face? Do you need an air supplied respirator? All these different types of respirators, they have different, what we call protection factors. So, some respirators, they can reduce your exposure level by a factor of 10. So if you have your exposure level, you divide it by 10. That's your new exposure level with the exposure limit. If you use a better type of respirator, you divide it by 100. If you use an even better one, it can be divided by 1,000. So the more protective your respirator, the more you're going to be protected, obviously. But then the bigger and more complicated your respirator is going to be. So the type of respirator that you're going to need is going to depend on what work you're doing and what controls you're using and what your exposure level is going to be. And without any kind of information on the ground, it's really hard to know in advance. But the silica tool, it will estimate. It'll tell you, okay, we think your exposure level is going to be 100 times the exposure limit. So you're going to need a full face respirator that's going to bring your exposure level down to a safe level. So that's basically one of the things that the tool can help you with. It can tell you what type of respirator you're going to need.
Okay, so now let's upset about 95% of the workforce and beards.
Yes.
Because we all know the rules regarding beards, like just putting a respirator over your beard doesn't really seal things up, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And I know that some people or some brands are now are introducing the full face, which actually goes over the beard, so you can get some safety there.
Yeah, there are some respirators. I think that these types of some of these respirators that don't require you to be full shaven or clean shaven, or there are, I've seen some images where it says, okay, if you have this type of mustache, you don't need to be clean shaven. I think if you had an inspector who came onto your site, you may run into problems because the regulations say you have to be clean shaven.
That's a good point. They have a valid argument there. Stop being chained to your construction company. That's what Revelate delivers to contractors like you who are trying to figure out AI and automations. I hear it all the time with guys I talk to, and it sounds like they spend way more time on things that waste money. Here's how Revelate does it. They study your business. They build custom AI software and automation tech to fit your process. They train you and your staff so you can save 50% of your time on the stuff that slows you and your projects down. You got into the trades to build things, not to be buried under endless admin work and broken systems. I know every day feels like you're solving the same problems instead of moving forward. That's why Revelate was created. They grew up in the construction industry and have been a part of it for more than 15 years. They know the grind and they work to fix it. Within weeks, you and your team and your business are saving half of your time on the stuff that keeps you from getting home and enjoying life. No more nights buried in the paperwork, just more time building and living. Stop being stuck in chaos. And right now, they're offering 25% savings on all new projects if you sign up before the end of the year. Let Revelate help you build something better. Book a demo. It's an easy chat and it's free. Book time now. www.revelate.com or on IG at revelate.inc or call them at 416-474-5755. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. Right.
Yeah. And there are loose fitting hoods. I've seen them used before, often in the pharmaceutical industry, for some reason. But they can accommodate. They, instead of it fitting tightly to your face, it's like a shield and it's loose fitting and it's it sort of has like Tyvek that comes down and covers your upper torso. It's an option, certainly. They are more expensive and they don't look nearly as easy to work in as something that is fitted tightly to your face. I find it can impede your vision because if you're working, you clearly want to be able to see side to side and you're moving your head quite a bit as well.
And then I want people to really understand that all of these filters, all of these respirators, there's an expiration date on them, right? It depending on how much you use them and how much airborne is there. And that you got to constantly be looking at that, right?
Yeah, that's right. And with the particulate respirators, sometimes you can tell that it's not working anymore. If you're finding it difficult to breathe through your filter, that means it's probably full of particulate and you need a new respirator. So on top of, you know, expiration dates and so on, that's another thing to pay attention to. And another thing that I guess follows up on what Megan was saying is that you can't just buy a respirator that meets the required criteria and slap it on yourself or slap it on a worker. You need to test the respirator to make sure that it fits properly because there are not every respirator fits every person. And so you need to try it on and get a proper fit test to make sure that it actually fits you and that you can move around. And when you talk, when you move around, the steel is maintained. Because if your respirator doesn't fit, it's not protecting you.
Yeah, if it starts to shift around your face and there's a gap and you can just slide your hand, then there's an issue here, right? It's not the right size. I mean, there's a reason why they sell different size respirators, right?
That's right.
Exactly. Everyone's got different. I also, is it still true that we should keep our respirators in a Ziploc bag while they're not being used? Instead of just thrown on the seat of the van or the truck or something like that?
Yeah, definitely. The ones that I used to use were very much like a silicone-y type material, which is nice. So they're easy to rinse, easy to wash, and I would keep it in. I'm trying to think, it was either a Tupperware container or a large Ziploc bag. And if you just wash it, if it's wet, and also condensation from breathing, you'll get that buildup. You want to make sure that you just maybe crack it a bit so that it can breathe, or you dry it out before you seal it up completely. And then the filters, you don't want to just leave because the filters now are contaminated, whether it's with silica dust or other materials, and leaving those loose in that bag as well, not great. So just putting some tape across the filter exposed part is a great sort of rule of thumb I see people do. often sites I go to, you just throw them out at the end of the day. They don't cost very much. So you take those filters off, throw them in the garbage, wash your respirator, and put fresh ones on for your next shift.
Can you guys share, because I know that you shared on the call when we talked, it's pretty easy to sign up, right? It's pretty easy to use this. It's not a difficult task for tradespeople to start jumping on board this, right?
Yeah, the way that Melanie designed this online tool that we call it, it's designed, it's easy, it's interactive, it has nice colors, it's supposed to be used by workers, managers, employers, union reps, health and safety committee members, myself, my dad, basically any. It is designed to be used on a computer, an iPad, and even your phone. It's adapted. We don't have, there isn't an app per se, but what you do is you can save it as sort of like an app on your homepage, and then it opens in a nice browser that is designed for a phone use, which I think is great, but it is designed to be used by anyone and everyone. And in Ontario, there are we're less stringent in terms of who can sign up. Basically, if you work with Silica and you want to take a look at the tool, there are two options on the website. If you have a WSIB number and you know it, there's an automatic, it links somehow to just make an automatic account. It doesn't, none of that information goes to WSIB. That's a common question that we get. It's just sort of a default number that's associated with a construction company, and it will give you automatic access. But if some people don't have that number, a lot of people don't work in different sectors, just there's an email. You can email and sign up for the tool yourself. So if you work in manufacturing, we've had educational people at universities and colleges inquire about the tool. They can get an account, no problem. Although the data is really geared towards construction, and it lends itself really well to construction type activities, construction happens everywhere. It happens at universities and colleges. It happens at schools. It happens in manufacturing facilities when they're doing renovations. So those are all, basically don't hesitate. If someone wants to take a look at the tool, they can get an account in Ontario.
Yeah, and the website again, sorry, is www.ontario.silicacontroltool.com, but it's also on the www.ohclw.on.ca. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. If you just Google Ontario Silica Tool, it will come up.
And then, I mean, could you guys, because you guys do far more data than I do, who are the bad players in the game? The tradespeople are like, I'm just going to assume bricklayers, maybe hardscaping trades, like they're always, it's just one kind of cut I'll do. It's just one little scenario I'll do. But are they the least likely to pay attention to airborne?
Are we going to name names, Melanie?
Not name names, but just trade itself. I want to point, because I've been on sites where I see the hardscapers, they're doing amazing work, and you know, they're magicians on the quick cut. I get it, but I don't see their hat and the rabbit. I like, they're not protected, right? And they just want to get that one cut done. And maybe they are wearing the wrong or the expired respirator. And I just want them to be aware of this. Like it's a safety, it's a major safety issue here. And this tool is actually helping them discover that even though you're outside, this has to help you, right? It's going to help you if you pay attention to what's going on right around where your work is, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably not the right person to answer that question, because most of the people who I work with are the people who come to me looking for help. You know, some tasks are more exposed than others. Some trades are more exposed than others, just by the nature of the work that they do. So I know that I have heard from drywall sanders that drywall actually, it contains fairly low levels of silica, but because the task itself is so dusty, you do get overexposed to silica, and you even get overexposed to just general dust. There is a level at which just any dust is bad for you. So drywall sanding is a very dusty task, and there are controls there are vacuum attachments for. Yeah. For drywall sanding, although I have heard from drywall sanders that they make the job harder. They don't like working with them, so they prefer to just deal with the dust. I don't do drywall sanding myself, so I can't, but I know that the controls do work and they can protect you from dust. But other than that, I think, you know, there are a lot of jobs that have where people work with even much higher concentrations of silica. I don't know who the bad actors are. Maybe Megan has more information than I do on
Well,
that.
in terms of workers that are being exposed, there are actually numbers, which I don't remember off the top of my head, but the trade, so they group them into like groupings of trades. So plumbers at risk of being exposed, you know, they're jackhammering out concrete to replace pipes and basements. Perfect example. Heavy equipment operators are another group that are exposed. I think they're saying around like 25 or 30,000 workers exposed on average, like some estimates. Masonry trades, plastering trades, which would probably include drywallers, like Melanie mentioned, and then just general construction trade helpers and laborers. That is a grouping itself, and they have the highest workers exposed. They're the guys who, like you said, Manny, that you go into a site and you can have a guy cutting concrete in a room or jackhammering concrete, another guy pulling down old plaster off of walls, another guy might be putting up ceiling tiles and cutting drywall, all within the same space, and you end up with this dust that is just a mixed bag of anything and everything, but almost certainly will contain silica dust.
I'm curious, have you guys tested it on other types of material? Like, I'm just thinking sawdust. Would it read or would it give you a reading?
Oh, we'd have to use a different methodology because the silica dust just has this tendency to, your silica has a tendency to become so fine and so small. We use a specific type of sampler, whereas wood dust, there's a different exposure limit for that as well. It's a lot higher than silica, but when you come in contact with wood dust, let's say you're a someone who's a carpenter or someone who is carving and grinding and smoothing out wood. We can test for that as well using a different sampler, but you run the risk really of sensitization or allergic reactions as well to different woods, along with that general like particulate burden that is now being placed on your lungs as you're breathing that in.
I bring it up because I remember, and I'm a huge fan of thermally modified wood, and when I first started using it almost 14 years ago, the first thing I noticed is that the airborne particulates regarding the sawdust was a lot finer than traditional sawdust. It was extremely fine just because of the process of that wood. And I'm just wondering if that would actually read as a result of that, because it got to the point where we started cutting it and I had to throw on a respirator because I couldn't breathe really well. And it was just noticeable on how fine the sawdust was. And I spoke to the manufacturer and they told me it's part of the process. That's a normal thing. But then you also get particular people that are sensitive to cedars or other kind of species of wood, and that affects their breathing. So then you start seeing a lot of carpenters now putting on the respirator because of that when they're cutting them, right?
Yeah, no, that's interesting to know about that you noticed that the dust being created was that much more fine with different types of woods. Did you call it pressure, not pressure treated, but heat treated wood?
It's thermally modified wood. So there's a process that's made on the wood. It drains all the moisture from the wood. So it makes it very, very dry. And that's why it becomes very, very stable. But when you cut it, literally your first cut, you notice the difference. Like, we've been cutting wood for so many years. We know exactly what cutting through spruce or pine or any kind of particular wood, what size that sawdust would be. But this one is dramatically finer, dramatically finer.
Wow. Yeah. No, I never. That's a new one. But
Something to look
that's good to
into.
know.
Yeah, something to look into,
Yeah.
because I'm just curious, because I can see, this kind of tool being, outside of the ones that we mentioned originally, it could be expanded to other environments where it might be effective, right? And then just let people know. I mean, bottom line is we want a completely clear job site. And it's like, I remember years ago, a lot of the HEPA filter machines were coming on job sites and people were starting to purchase those. But then a lot of the companies, the manufacturers, started going closing down. And I guess they couldn't maintain the machinery or the filters or what have you. And so we couldn't have that. And then people started makeshifting. And all they were doing, it was just taking the air in the unit or the dwelling that they were renovating and shooting it outside. But then you had workers outside working. And now you're just shooting all these particulars in the environment outside or your neighbors or what have you. So all you're doing is moving it from one location to the next. The idea is that you want to keep it all clean and contained. And if we can vacuum and seal it and then get it away from our lungs, that's the best solution, right?
Yeah, that would be yeah, kicking stuff outside with a when you have a negative air system with that the big I'm picturing those big metal boxes with all all the layers of filtration, and yeah, you're allowed to exhaust outside, but you know, especially when it comes to asbestos abatement, which is where I would see it most commonly, you don't want to be kicking all that asbestos fibers outside, so that's why it goes through the filtration system, and then what you're kicking outside is 0.03 potentially of what's getting through. But same thing with everything else. Yeah, you'll end up with that big accumulation outside. You could have a worker who's standing downwind doing his job for 8 hours a day. It's hard to, there's a lot of things to consider on construction sites, especially when you're mixing indoor and outdoor.
Three-way the world, these little puppies. I'm speaking from experience. I've actually installed these and I love these. Three-way prefabricated inside drywall corner, the first one-piece solution for perfect crisp corners every time. With Three-Way, you'll improve your quality, save on labor, and cut down on time. Traditional methods require three tapes, lots of sanding, and high skill. But with Three-Way corners, they install in just a fraction of the time with fewer steps. It is adjustable for any angle, reinforced to cover gaps, and designed to blend seamlessly into the corner. Say goodbye to pesky touch-ups and hello to flawless finishes. Try Three-Way today and revolutionize your drywall game. Perfect corners every time. To purchase or check out some how-to videos to see the installs in action, visit threeway.ca or connect with them at 306-514-3768 or drop them an email at threewaytheworld@gmail.com. Connect with me, TCL, and stop by the studio and get a free pack on us for anyone to try. And trust me, I'm telling you, you'll love it. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. I want to bring up the fact that when we start mixing mortars, that's a point when I start to get a little upset with tradespeople because they never put on respirators and they don't realize that when you get that plume of airborne mortar dust and you're mixing it with water, that's still being inhaled into you. And you definitely need to be, I mean, that's a point where you should use this tool and test it right then and there so they can discover that that little plume of smoke or dust that's coming up from the bucket when they're mixing the mortar, that's dangerous.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, mixing and pouring, That is one of the activities that's in the tool. And I think any kind of dumping, mixing task always throws up alarms for us as occupational hygienists, because we know that all the dust that can come from that. And people think it's another one of those ones where you just do it quickly, you don't think about it. But yes, you definitely need to protect yourself during those kind of activities. Especially if you're doing it several times a day. If you do it, you know, if it's only like 2-3 minutes, but you're doing it five times a day, then that really adds up over time.
Now, I'm assuming you guys are going to take this tool across Canada, right? Every province eventually will be using it.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping for. It's, you know, we started in BC, and from the beginning, when we developed the tool in British Columbia, we knew that it was something that could be helpful across Canada and even in other parts of the world, because it's, you know, silica dust is a problem in construction sites all over the world. And so we designed it so that it would not just be relevant for British Columbia work sites. We made it so it's adaptable, we've talked to, I think, all of the provinces across Canada. We've talked to CCOHS. We've talked to federal groups. I've talked to some people in the territories. Because, you know, health and safety is under provincial jurisdiction, it is more complicated than we would like to make it available for every province, but we're working on it one by one. We're working on all the provinces.
I'm going to try to just be simple politician, Manny, and I'm like, just enforce it in the law where it's part of PPE, period, done. Is that not simple enough?
Yeah, well, in British Columbia, the way that we worked with directly when we developed the silica control tool, the reason why we made it was because there was a new substance specific set of regulations that were coming into effect in British Columbia for silica. And what it said was that any work site where workers might be exposed to hazardous levels of silica, they needed to have exposure measurements that showed what the levels would be, and they needed to have a written exposure control plan. So the organization that I work for, the British Columbia Construction Safety Alliance, we're a not-for-profit organization with a mandate to produce health and safety training and services for the construction industry. So we worked with industry to develop a tool basically designed to help industry meet these new requirements, because there was a concern in industry that they wouldn't be able to, because how are you going to have all these measurements, and how are you going to have a written plan for every single work site? So we worked with industry, and we worked directly with the regulator, WorkSafe BC, to create something that would be acceptable to them, so that if the silica control tool creates a written exposure control plan, does it meet the WorkSafe BC regulatory requirements? So we worked directly with WorkSafe BC, and what they have done is they have written into their regulation that yes, you do need to have measurements, but you don't need to personally take your own measurements from your own work site. If you have measurements from another work site where you're doing basically the same thing, you can use those measurements. You can say, well, we know at another work site where we were doing the same thing, we were exposed to this level. So if we do that at this new work site, we can use the same controls and expect that workers will be protected. So that is written into the regulation, and in the guidelines that say, how can you comply with this regulation? That is where it mentions the silica control tool. It says the silica control tool can be used as a source of this information.
Good.
So
That's great
that's
to
how it
hear.
is in British Columbia.
Yeah. Are we going to see a ban the same way that Australia has banned the man-made stone slabs? Are we going to see that ban come to Canada, come to Ontario or BC? Is that being
Not
talked about?
anytime soon. I don't think that we are. I don't think that that is in the pipeline yet for Canada. But we do have artificial stone here. We haven't seen as many cases of the artificial stone silicosis in Canada as they did in Australia. But that's not because it's not out there. I think it's because we're not looking for it. In
Yeah, I agree.
Australia, they did a big study where they based the researchers. They I think it was the different Australian states. They paid for researchers to go out and look at the lungs of workers who were working with. So they looked at hundreds of workers who were working with artificial stone, and they found that 20 to 30% of these workers had silicosis, and most of them didn't even know it.
Yeah.
So if we did the same thing in Canada, I don't know what we would find. I don't think that we have the will or the data yet to ban it in Canada, but it's certainly something that is being discussed around the world. I've seen the discussions in the United States. I've seen the discussions in Europe, in the United Kingdom. We're not talking about it as much as we should be in Canada yet.
I'll do it for you guys. I'll just sign up and I'll set up and then I'll just make surprise visits because I've been to my fair share of fabrication plants and I've walked in and I've seen that wall of dust, right? And then unfortunately, you see a lot of immigrants that are doing the grinding and cutting. And that's, like you said, I totally agree with you. That hasn't been looked into yet. But I think if we do look into it, I think we will be on the same path as Australia.
Yeah, and the content, just like the actual content of silica in construction products, is sometimes I like to mention it. I'll give a few examples, like mortar. You were talking about mortar earlier. Depending on the mix, depending on the what you purchased, it could be 25 to 75% silica. It's a huge concentration. I mean, even 20% content of anything makes up that's 1/5 of the product, let alone 75%. Fiber cement board is another product that I know carpenters and plumbers are cutting through. That's 10 to 30% silica. Concrete, I was just looking, I've looked up safety data sheets for concrete before because I wanted to get a sense of, are we trending 2%? Are we trending 30%? And I've seen a bunch of safety data sheets, and a lot of them are considered, I'm going to call it, proprietary information. They don't want to give out their specialty mix. It's a mix of aggregate, crushed stone, sand, Of course, cement, fly ash, and other binders. And so aggregate will contain silica.
Yeah.
The sand will contain silica. So some SDSs I've seen as low as less than 0.1, which I find suspect, to 0 to 2%, and some that say 10 to 30% silica content. And they just give you that range because they don't want to give away their trade secret. So if we're lucky to find safety data sheets for these products, it can give you an answer right there. But even when you do find them, you have to consider, are they just giving me a range? Could it be that much higher on the product I'm working on? Which is something that, anyway, I like to talk about that.
I'm just assuming the higher the MPA on a concrete, the more silica is in there.
I would think so, in terms of strength and
strength
force
of concrete.
Yeah. Yeah. You're the silica, the binder, the aggregate, the cement is all what's going to give you that power and that support. And then less water. I know, less water equals less water content, but of course then it's less viscous. Will it pour as well? Definitely cold temperature weather concrete. I know they shift their mixes to accommodate for that. It's quite complex. And concrete is everywhere. It's in almost all big builds, big buildings, foundations, as we know, and you need to cut into it. You need to replace water lines. We need to core through, electricians are coring through concrete to run cables and conduits. And they might say, well, we only do it for 5 to 10 minutes. But like Melanie said, it's 5 to 10 minutes in the morning, 5 to 10 minutes a couple times in the afternoon, 5 to 10 minutes the next day. And it does add up, even though it's not that obvious at the time.
We haven't even gotten into the world of surface grinding. I'm sure that all over the country, you've got old retail commercial spaces that have been building up surfaces on their floor, and then they come in and just grind them down. I get it that a lot of the machinery has vacuum and it's kind of contained, and the workers are fully PPE'd and covered up in full masks and stuff, but that's just all pure airborne particulates, right?
Yeah. Grinding, any kind of grinding task, we know that it creates a lot of dust. But that's the best you can do, really, is do these, use the controls. Sometimes if it's creating a lot of dust, it can be a good idea to contain the dust in some, when you do like asbestos abatement, you have to set up a poly enclosure. If it is creating really huge levels of dust and you don't want it to spread all through the work site, sometimes it's a good idea to do that for silica as well. Although the caveat is that increases the exposure for the person who's actually doing the work, because now they're concentrated inside an area. So then they might need to be extra vigilant with their PPE.
Now, I don't know if you were to create negative pressure, would that be assisting you or hindering you?
I don't be assisting the everyone outside of that area. Mm-hmm. Better for them. But depending on how that negative pressure is going into a space, and is it being kicked outside or is it just then being pushed into the basement? Without controlling that dusty contamination, it really then just puts a risk to those who are in that negative space. But that's that would be probably the way I would go about it. An enclosure, neg air machine with filters.
And a bag. And a bag on the fan that's actually drawing everything out. Yeah.
Anything HEPA. HEPA is what you want, and that'll cover your bases. There's nothing better than a HEPA filter, as far as I know.
I agree with you. I love them. I even sometimes go to the tune when it's kind of just thumping, At first you're wondering, I bought a broken machine. Is there anything else you guys wanted? We covered quite a bit. Did we miss anything?
One of the things that Megan and I wanted to share is that we are going to be both of us are going to be at the Canadian Concrete Expo in February.
February, yeah.
I think it's in Mississauga. And we're going to be doing a talk on February 13th about the silica control tool. We're also going to have a booth. People can come and meet us and talk about silica, talk about the tool. You can check it out. If you have any questions, we can show you how it works. Megan tells me that she's also going to be giving away coolers. So that's something that we're going to have. And we have a free trade show admission VIP code for anybody who's interested. It is CCE564. So anybody who wants to register for CCE, they can use our VIP code.
Will there be beverages in that cooler there?
I don't know.
Oh, remains to be seen. It's come see us.
I'm just asking the obvious questions. That's all. Somebody else is going to ask me if there's beverages in that cooler. I'll leave the beverages to let them decide what kind of beverages at that point.
That's a good point. And the name of our session, both Melanie and I are co-speaking, is the Silica Control Tool, a free online tool to protect your lung health. So that's
awesome.
That will be us.
Introducing Alt Labor Solutions, the game changer for contractors and laborers. Are you a contractor needing skilled labor, or have labor in need of quick shifts? Or how about buying, selling, or renting tools, material, and equipment? Connect easily with contractors and find resources hassle-free through Alt Labor Solutions online platform. Post job listings with project details, browse public resumes, and choose the right person for the job. Explore their job board for new opportunities and connect with top talent. Alt Labor Solutions revolutionizes the labor industry with a user-friendly interface, secure payments, and a supportive team. Visit them at altlaborsolutions.com and start connecting with other contractors today. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
And I, you know what, I was just thinking, Melanie, we were talking the other day about the whole concept around smoking, like a worker, when you talk to the worker and they're like, well, I smoke, so what does it matter anyway?
Especially the ones that have a filter and they have a hole in the filter and then they put the cigarette through it. Those ones, those bright light bulbs. That's what you're talking about. Those ones. I got it. Yeah.
That is not a best practice.
Well, I'm sure the smoking makes it worse for you.
Yeah, that's it does. Yeah. So, you know, you have that lung damage from smoking and then you're adding the lung damage from the silica on top. So you are, I think there, I've spoken to people, there's a conception like, well, I already smoke, like I'm already messing up my lungs, so who cares about dust? Well, you're even more at risk. You were already at risk, now you're even more at risk. And so I think that people who smoke, they need to protect themselves. They need to be even more vigilant than people who don't smoke, which is kind of not the way people think about it. But it's you're not off the hook because you already are damaging your lungs.
If you're a carpenter and you cut a finger off, you don't become a plumber. I don't understand that. Like, and think I got nine more to go. No, yeah. It's just, they're both evil. As simple as that. You shouldn't be doing that. Yeah. Right.
Lung damage is lung damage. Add smoking plus silica exposure plus anything else at a job site. It's all additive at a minimum. Could even be synergistic. It's something to our lungs are something that it's hard to imagine lungs. When I was a kid, I went to some science show and tell type thing, and they had sheep lungs that they had cut out of a sheep, and they put on an intubator, and they were showing the lungs inflating and deflating as if the sheep was breathing. That stuck with me. It was interesting. You just don't think of your lungs, and they're so important. They take in anything you breathe. They're taking that in because they're trying to give your blood oxygen and kick out the carbon dioxide. That's what they're really trying to do, oxygenate your blood. But anything that damages your lungs, you may not see it and you may not notice it because of that latency period. And then it becomes a real problem when you get to be of my age, like 40, 41. That's when you start to feel a bit less invincible.
Well, you guys woke me up at the start of the show when you start talking about how the lung starts to get hard by this interaction of the dust particles coming in, the silica coming in there, and now you're trying to expand that lung with parts of it being hard. You can't do it. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's right. The lungs are very delicate, and we need them. They're essential. Sometimes I hear people, I don't really like this description, but people talk about silica like it's the new asbestos. It's not the new asbestos because it's been around for a long time. We've known about the hazards of silica exposure for thousands of years. You know, even Romans working with stone were getting silicosis. But the comparison to asbestos is not completely off, because you know asbestos, it also causes like this kind of lung scarring, asbestosis. And so if you're working with both silica and asbestos, you're getting both of those lung scarring diseases. Both of them cause lung cancer. Silica does not cause mesothelioma, so that is that's a plus for silica. But it is very serious, and that's why we're taking it seriously, and we're trying to help people protect themselves.
Yeah, and I definitely encourage everybody to check it out and go online, and then I'll see you guys at the show. We'll see. I'll see you at the show as well. I'm sure that I'll be swinging by there and check it out. Concrete Show is always a great show to go to.
Great. We'll look forward to seeing you in person.
Great. We just got to do the 12 questions. You guys okay to doing those? Sure. Are you surprised by that? You're surprised by that, I think. But again, everybody reach out to them at www.silicacontroltool.com and also on the website www.ohcow.on.ca for more information. What is your favorite construction word or phrase?
Oh boy, we weren't prepared for this, Melanie.
There's no right or wrong.
I think it's do as I say, not as I do.
Good one.
Yeah, one that I've heard is, I don't know if people say it in construction, but I do. It's that, you know, people in construction, we shout safety and whisper health. You know, there's so much focus on safety, but the health hazards, construction has we're exposed to just as many occupational disease hazards as any other industry, if not more. So that's my saying.
I like that one. What is your least favorite tool?
I would say a power tool. They make me, actually chainsaw. A chainsaw makes me nervous.
Yeah, I don't like a chainsaw either.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, that's the same for me.
What do you guys miss from your childhood?
Oh, what do I miss? I miss not having a smartphone. I miss being free of the internet. I like the internet, but I sometimes miss not having it in my face all the time.
Very much.
I miss a school's field trips. Always my favorite.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and I got to go to cool places, and it's really your opportunity to have fun and learn, as opposed to just be told to learn.
True. What construction sound do you guys love?
Sound of a negative air machine.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. Are you looking at me? Yeah, I think I'm just going to agree with Megan.
Favorite beverage?
Coca-Cola.
I like tea.
Tea? Mm-hmm. What turns you on and what turns you off in construction?
I have a good answer for that. It's workers that I encounter that are just that are there, that are respectful. They're there to listen. They may not like what I'm saying, but they're going to listen, and they'll give their input. And things I don't like are those who are dismissive. But everybody has bad days, so I understand.
Yeah, I find construction workers, I really like working construction workers, because they're so hardworking, and I think that everybody really wants to do a good job, and I really respect that. And what turns me off is the same, when people have the attitude, this is the way we've always done it, so this is the right way. There's always room to learn and room to grow.
For sure. Favorite curse word? You guys haven't been cursing up a storm here, so you don't have to curse. But if you want to curse, by all means, you're welcome to curse.
Are there any limitations on this show?
No, nope, nothing whatsoever. I've not been surprised yet.
Well, I like a good damn it, but it's about as dangerous as I'll get.
My kids are very prudish, so I have like banished all curse words from my vocabulary. Okay,
good.
But I don't know. I lived in the UK for 4 years, and there are a lot of colorful curses there, so I like those ones.
I know exactly which ones you're talking about. What's your favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
Oh, a truck. The newer, the better.
Really? Any particular brand?
Recently, had a it was a GMC Denali, quite nice, but only had that for a year and went with something a bit more sensible since I don't need to be hauling anything.
Me, well, I like to fly. So I would say like a plane, but that's not a car.
Sure,
But
planes have
I
been
like
brought up
fly.
for sure. Plane.
Yeah.
What profession other than your own would you guys like to attempt one day?
Recycling, like e-waste recycling. I think that's great. I'm very into sustainability and the concept that we generate so much e-waste. I have two computers and two phones at my desk right now. You know, where does that go? Where do those metals go? I'd like to do that.
It's a good one.
Yeah, my brother is an electrician, and I think that that is I would like I wish I had done a trade like that, or if I had an opportunity to spend time on that, I think I would like to be an electrician.
Do they still have the same broom jokes between electricians and plumbers out west?
Oh, I don't know.
Ask them.
They're too polite to
Ask them. Most electricians don't own a broom. That's the whole point. W
tell me.
what profession would you guys not like to do?
I mean, anything involving I would say water. I'm not especially cold, dark water. Oh, deep sea divers, there we go. Underwater welders, that would not be my
Yeah, that's gotta be
first
a
choice.
tough one. That's a tough one.
Yeah, I don't think I would like to be a politician. That wouldn't work for me. I like to tell things like, tell it like it is, be a straight shooter, help people with as best as I can. So I wouldn't want to have to be juggling different priorities.
Last question. If heaven exists, what would you guys like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
That hell's an option, and it's probably more fun.
It's still an option at that point. All right. I like it.
Hope they would welcome me in, but Megan maybe has a better attitude.
Guys, thank you so much for jumping on the call just before the craziness of the holidays and everything like that. And I really appreciate you guys in educating everybody on how serious this is. And I agree with you. It's more of a health than a safety thing. Let's pay attention to more of that stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for taking the time to highlight this issue to your listeners.
Will do for sure. I'll share it as much as I can, and then we'll see you guys in February.
All right. Thank you. Look forward to seeing you then.
All right, take care.